AM 1490, FM 1079, or anytime at RadioKingston.org.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning. It is Saturday at 10 a.m., and that means that it's time for your weekly dose of Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And if you may be joining us for the first time, this program is dedicated to exploring and celebrating the vibrant natural world around us. We're so lucky, living here in the Hudson Valley and Catskills region, to have such, you know, incredible ecosystems and rich biodiversity all around us. And so the foundation of this show is the understanding that nature is not out there somewhere. We are nature. We are in nature all of our lives, even here in the Midtown Kingston, every day of the year. And so the invitation with this program is to, you know, get outside and check it out, what's going on around us, you know, because if we slow ourselves down just a little bit and pay a little bit closer attention to what's happening around us in the more than human world, it is inevitable that we will end up finding some interesting creature we didn't expect to find or observe some fleeting natural phenomenon that we easily could have missed if we just barreled through our days looking at our phones and being distracted by all the other humans. And so the way we do this on the show Nature Nuggets is every week we seek out amazing people from our region who have developed some expertise in some part of the natural world. So over the past year plus, we've had scientists, educators, authors, conservationists, artists, birders, all kinds of folks who have insights to share. And so we bring them on and have them tell us some stories with the idea that perhaps we'll come away with a little bit of a deeper understanding of what we might encounter if we step outside. And so I know I'm not alone in these often distressing times in receiving a huge mental health boost from the moments that I take to quiet my mind, even briefly, and take in the arrival of a new bird or the emergence of a new butterfly or the appearance of a fresh flower in bloom that wasn't there the day before. And so we all get so much from kids to adults. You know, just personally and even emotionally, just we get so much from that gift we can get from the natural world. And of course, it goes both ways, right? Because we know that people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. So with that introduction, I'm going to kick us off with a segment we do every week called Who's About Town, which is a bit of a Society Pages kind of section for the more than human world. And, you know, it's been a couple weeks since I've been on the air. I missed last week. And then our alternate host, Chris Baker, did the week before. So there has been weeks and weeks of really, you know, May is sort of the, I don't know, the Christmas season for birders or naturalists. You know, it's just so exciting to see the natural world just explode into life. And of course, that catharsis, you know, goes both ways. You can just feel the rhythm of the people responding to the rhythm of the natural world. I went to Adam's nursery yesterday to get some plants to put in the ground, and you couldn't even find a parking place. You know, everybody was just filling their cars with all the flowers and bushes because this is the season to put things in the ground. And then into the evening, you know, I stopped by the Westkill Brewery just right here in Midtown Kingston, and you know, 8 p.m., it was 70 degrees, and there was a DJ playing music and kids running around, and you could just feel this sort of collective exhale of the warm season's arrival, and so cool to see the human response and the community unfolding, you know, in response to the seasonal transformation around us. And so, of course, you know, I'm a a bird person. Birds are my were my gateway drug into the natural world, and they are remain my primary passion. And so May, again, you know, is just the most extraordinary time. And so one cool experience that I had, this reason I wasn't on the air a bit back, was going out to Little Pond, which is one of my favorite campgrounds. It's way up deep in the Catskills, kind of an hour or so from Kingston. And there was just an amazing phenomenon. We hit it just right, where the season was far enough along that the tropical birds, all the fancy migrants, had arrived. But the treetops had not fully leafed out yet, and so they were much easier to see, because many of these fancy little birds, we got to see Blackburnian warblers, which is, you know, if you look at a picture of one, they're just exceptional. They're brilliant orange, they have incredible patterns, but they're also like 4 inches long, and they stay up in the canopy. And so once it's leafed out, it can be maddening to try to get a solid look at one. But it was very cool. We got to see them. There were oven birds all throughout the forest, which is another kind of warbler with a little kind of orange mohawk, kind of an olive green bird that were just calling ubiquitously through the forest. So many other birds. There was American redstarts, which is a beautiful black and orange little guy. Black-throated green warblers, red-eyed vireos, on and on, and also indigo buntings, which is a real showboat of a bird. He is just this almost impossible electric kind of blue color, and he likes to perch at the most prominent, highest point, you know, in a tree out in near a meadow or something that he can find and sing his heart out. And so we got to see some of them. It was very cool. And we saw some neat behavior. You know, this is the time of year, right? Everybody's breeding. Everybody's, you know, making nests, having babies. And we got to see some cool specific behavior with nest building, right? Because different birds obviously make different kinds of nests, but they all kind of have to start with the same sort of infrastructure, right? Where you start with bigger sticks and then you move down into smaller and smaller sticks. And it's an amazing process that they can do this with their little beaks anyway. But then when it gets to the final stage of the process, they really want to have a warm, cozy place for those naked little baby birds to be safe. And so they go to great lengths to find spider webs, or sometimes they'll pluck their own down feathers to make that soft little lining. But we saw a neat thing. We saw a red-eyed vireo perched upside down on a tent caterpillar web nest, and it was ripping out the webbing and filling its beak. And I'm certain it was doing that to go line its nest. And then that same afternoon, we saw an oriole down on the beach. There's a sandy beach that they've made on the shore of Little Pond. And we were trying to figure out what it was doing. I raised my binoculars and realized it was picking up pieces of filament of fishing line that had been left behind. And I know what it was doing, because orioles are the only bird we have that makes these hanging pendulum kind of sock nests. And so they require long strands. So naturally they would use something like grass or sedges or something. But plastic or fishing line is far more durable and strong than something they're going to find in the natural world. And so they're smart enough to realize that. And so there was this oriole on the ground picking up fishing line to build its nest. So that's a really cool thing that's going on out there right now. And another experience I'll share from Little Pond was, you know, quite mesmerizing. We saw some splashing in the shallow water and thought maybe it was the trout getting, you know, leaping for insects, and got over closer and realized, in fact, it was an entire American toad orgy, which is something I had never seen before and was absolutely, you know, kind of mesmerizing. I was with a friend, and we looked in the shallow water and realized there were dozens and dozens of these toads. And we'd been seeing them on the hike in the daytime, because most of their lives, they're terrestrial, and you find them in the forest, one of the differences between toads and frogs. But when the weather warms just enough, which we'd caught just the right moment, the males hop their way down through the forest and find a pond. And they begin to do their trill, and they don't have a ribbit like some frogs. They do this prolonged, kind of impressive trill. And actually, I was able, in their kind of excitement, they had lost all their inhibition. And so they allowed us to just kind of get on our hands and knees and watch them very closely. And it's amazing because they'll sit in the shallow water and they blow up their throat and do that wild trill. And it creates these concentric rings in the water where the sound waves, you know, make this. I actually took some video and posted it. If you don't follow us, and if you're on the Instagrams, our handle is at HV Nature Nuggets. And I put a video of that cool concentric ring of the toad song. But so it's a very crazy way that they do this. So the males have these, they call them tubercles, these horny tubercles on their second and third fingers. And those are specific adaptations to grab a tight hold onto the females. And the males, American toads, are smaller than the females. And so the male's always on top. And this mating grasp is distinctive enough, a characteristic, that it has a scientific name called amplexus. And so we got to witness a whole lot of amplexus going on. And the pair will stay in amplexus until they're either finished mating or another male separates them. And we saw a lot of that going on. There seemed to be more males than females. And so the males were hopping on each other and then realizing that wasn't going to work out. And they would get in a fight and then kind of, and then realize, okay, we're going to have to go try to knock another male off of a female. And so there was a lot of jockeying going on. And sometimes they would sort of get so worked up into a frenzy that they would just start grabbing on every, you know, you end up with just a toad ball, which apparently can be quite dangerous for the female because this is all happening underwater. But they do need to breathe. And so the whole process did not look entirely comfortable for the female the entire time because she had to keep pushing with all her strength just to get her nose out of the water for a minute, get a good breath, and then she'd get, you know, pushed back down. But meanwhile, and so all of this happens with, you know, the males get there first. They start their trill. That attracts the females to gather from around the forest. Then within a few hours, this whole, you know, mating frenzy happens. And then the female starts to lay these eggs. And this was the craziest thing. And again, if you, I posted some photos from this on the Instagram. But she starts to lay these long strands of eggs. And they can come out, you know, one female is like something like 20 feet of these eggs in this, you know, held together in this long strand. And there were dozens of them. So there were piles and piles of these sort of gooey looking egg strings. And they quickly kind of coil up like an old phone cord. And then so meanwhile, while she's doing that, the male is you know, fertilizing them as they come out. And so I read from a naturalist, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And I read from a naturalist who did some mathematical calculations that if every egg from one pair of toads to survive to adulthood, and each toad lived for 5 years, and all the eggs from their descendants survived, the entire surface of the earth would be covered in toads in 15 years. So they are very prolific with the amount they can produce. But of course, all of those babies do not survive. In fact, when we returned the next morning, most of the eggs had been dispersed. So I think between all the other creatures, from birds to fish, you know, this is a smorgasbord for them. But many of them do survive. And the warmer the water, the faster the eggs will develop and hatch. And so the tiny little tadpoles come out. And then in just less than a couple of months, they metamorphose into little toadlets that are just start out about a half an inch long. And then and in a good year, there's thousands and thousands of them. And within a few days, once they've become little toadlets, it's time for them to jump out of the water and hop back up into the woods where they will spend the rest of their life as a terrestrial animal. And then and within 3 years, 2 or 3 years, they'll be ready to turn around and do that again. So thought that was a fun thing I wanted to share with you. Another cool experience I had at the Hudson Valley Farm Hub once a year, as I've mentioned on the air before, does a public birding day. And I was able to play hooky a couple hours early from work and go out and catch just the last couple hours of that really beautiful weather that day. And my highlight of the day was to come across a black-billed cuckoo. And this is, you know, a lot of folks are familiar with our sort of brighter, showier neotropical migrants. But the cuckoo is rather shy and elusive, and they're never common as far as I know, but they are all around us here. And so this is a bird coming from deep in South America, could be all the way down to Bolivia or you know even into Central South America. But they fly all the way up across the Gulf of Mexico, come all the way, and then they breed here in our woods around us. And they're very different. than any other kind of birds. They're both in their physiology, but also sort of their vibe. They've got kind of a hunchback, and they give off kind of a moody sort of villain vibe, to me anyway. And they're secretive, and they tend to perch often motionless for long periods of time, which can make them very tricky to actually locate. But anyway, I did get to see one, just clear. They've got a red eye and kind of this curved little beak. And they have, you know, a couple of amazing things. They usually build their own nests, like other birds. But sometimes some cuckoos decide that they can't be bothered with all of that. And so they will practice nest parasitism, where they will find another bird who has just laid its own eggs or just finished its nest. And they'll come in, knock those out, and lay their own eggs, or even just lay their own eggs next to this other bird's eggs. And then they have developed, their eggs develop faster and hatch earlier than almost any other species. And so they usually can, if they time it right, you know, make sure their babies are born. And even though a cuckoo is far bigger than most of the little songbirds that we have, the instinct of, you know, parent birds is so strong that no matter when a baby hatches in there, even if the baby is bigger than they are, they will run themselves ragged feeding this. And so you can end up with this crazy sight where you'll have this, you know, juvenile cuckoo who's twice the size of this poor warbler that's been trying to feed it for the, you know, but they will sometimes trick other birds into raising their own babies. And if you know, keep an eye out, you know, they are in our forests right now. Okay. The last Who's About Town experience that I will highlight was a really cool morning. So I went out and spent a morning of birding at the Red Fox Ravine, right here in the city of Kingston. It's the Kingston Land Trust's cool acquisition. And there was a bunch of neat things about this. So first of all, I was there because Scenic Hudson is working with the Cary Institute and developing this survey project called Defining Urban Biodiversity. So they're refining their protocol about how to, you know, document the birds and the vegetation diversity at a number of sites. And so already in the past, I think, couple weeks, they've surveyed 36 sites in three cities. And so the three cities that are defined as the River Cities by the River Cities Program, Scenic Hudson, is Kingston and also Poughkeepsie and Newburgh. And so this is a new project that's going to be going on for hopefully years to come. And it's just a very cool way to, you know, really document and prove, you know, the how much urban biodiversity, you know, is happening. My highlight experience that morning was getting to be just eye level, 10 feet away from a male scarlet tanager, which is just about, you know, it's definitely a contender for the most dramatic of the neotropical birds that have arrived this past month. Just, you know, fire engine red with the black wings and sort of this white ivory colored bill. Very cool. And so that little update is a foreshadow for two upcoming programs, because looking forward to having Kingston Land Trust folks come on and talk about their plans for that ravine and the other projects, because, you know, having this asset right here in the city limits of Kingston is very neat. And then also we'll be wanting to, you know, talk more about this Defining Urban Biodiversity project. All right. Last thing, I said that was going to be the last thing, but I lied. Last thing I really will say in this section is just that it's been neat to see Nature Nuggets out and about. We are mentioned in the cover article of the Hudson Valley One this week. There is a great article about eels that features me a little bit, and then Chris Bowser, amazing eel expert from the Department of Environmental Conservation. So if you're out and about town or down at Hannaford's and you see the eels on the cover, check out that article, because that's always an incredible story to learn more about. The more, it doesn't matter how many times I read about the life cycle of eels, it never stops being interesting. Okay, well, before we dive into our guests who have been patiently sitting here live in the studio with me for the last 20 minutes, we're going to take a quick break, hear some words from our community.
Hi, I'm Susan Copenhaver from the Ulster County Office for Aging. We're currently working on recruiting volunteer drivers and schedulers for our Neighbor to Neighbor program, which offers people in need rides to medical appointments. Drivers are reimbursed for mileage and can choose when and where they wish to drive. Schedulers work to create rides for people who need them. If you're 60 years or older, Lyft and Uber drivers in local areas can also take you to medical appointments, shopping, and pharmacies through our GoGo program. The Ulster County Office for Aging also assists older adults to register for the UCAT shopping bus and paratransit van, another way for older adults to get to medical appointments in our area. All of these programs are free to riders. If you're in need of these services or you wish to volunteer, or if you're a Lyft or Uber driver who'd like to participate, please call our office at 845-340-3456 or visit our website at ulstercountyny.gov/aging.
Hi, I'm Kevin Godby. Join me Monday nights at 9 for Kingston Happenings. I'll help you stay informed about upcoming events, new businesses, initiatives from local nonprofits, and much more. I'll be chatting with movers, shakers, doers and dreamers, the interesting people and personalities that are making things happen in our community, always with great music from local musicians. Kingston Happenings is the radio extension of my website that tells you about everything that's going on in the Kingston area, kingstonhappenings.org. Kingston Happenings, Monday nights at 9 p.m. here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, and anytime on radiokingston.org.
Hudson Valley Hospice is facilitating a spousal and partner loss support group at St. John's Episcopal Church beginning Monday, June 2nd. This group is designed to help participants move through the grieving process as the result of the death of a spouse or partner. The group will meet on the first and third Monday of each month, with 8 sessions in total. Participants will meet from Monday, June 2nd through Monday, September 22nd, from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at St. John's Episcopal Church, 207 Route 32 in Kingston. Prior registration is required to participate. To register, call the Bereavement Center at 845-240-7579 and reference this group to learn more. That's the Bereavement Center at 845-240-7579. Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And I am delighted on this rainy morning to have two very special guests in the studio with me today. Rita Shaheen, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And Heather Blakely, you too.
Good morning.
Rita is the Director of Parks and Community Engagement at Scenic Hudson. And Heather is the Senior Park Planner at Scenic Hudson. And we are glad to be here, but this is not the show we thought we were going to be doing this morning. We have been planning for weeks and working with the tech team here at Radio Kingston to bring a live broadcast from the field at a special event that was organized for today and at Black Creek Preserve. But this is our plan B because we got rained out. But I think looking outside, I think it's a good affirmation that that was definitely the right call. So we're going to talk about some awesome, exciting new developments at Black Creek and elsewhere with Scenic Hudson Parks. But I wanted to start off asking the two of you, you know, maybe just to begin with a little bit. You know, you both have been working for, you know, I know almost a dozen years in your place, Heather, and longer for you, Rita, you know, dedicated to, you know, developing parks. And I'd love to hear just a little bit about kind of what was the spark of passion, you know, how you got into dedicating your life to this kind of work.
Okay, thank you, Laurel. I'll start. I grew up in upstate New York, real upstate New York, in Utica, and we were outside all the time. We had a small garden. My mother was always out in the garden. My father was always out, and we went to the Adirondacks. The outdoors was just where I was the most comfortable. I also liked art, and I liked science, and I liked bugs and all those kinds of things. And over time, it all kind of gelled to become, I guess, my career, where I studied landscape architecture. And then came to Scenic Hudson many years ago, and I'm thrilled to be doing what I'm doing, where, you know, making parks for people, trails for people. There's nothing that could be more rewarding.
Awesome. Love it.
Yeah. Well, so I guess I was raised in a family of gardeners, so that kind of is a lot of where I started. And just I know one of the most special moments to me as a kid was like bringing something back from the brink of death, nurturing a little plant, and then all of a sudden it's alive and it's flowering. And that was kind of really kind of a wow moment for me. So, but also over the years, just learning and, you know, being outdoors, avid hiker, backpacker, also just wanting to bring people outside and kind of have them hopefully experience the same things I've been experiencing outside and learning just by observations, and loving your observations, by the way. Just noticing nature, what are the trees doing? What are the plants doing? What are animals doing? So I started out in, I'm also a landscape architect registered in New York. So started in a small firm after college and, you know, doing residential design, but evolved more and more into my interest from horticultural and show gardens into more natural gardens and, you know, really loving wetlands and kind of this mix of a lot of different plants and species that live in those environments. So that kind of evolved, and just this was kind of the perfect place to bring it all together. Scenic Hudson, you know, creating parks where people can get outdoors and also experience all these different environments. So it's really great. That's been the path.
Well, thank you so much to both of you for what you do. I mean, it really adds such a crucial dimension to the quality of life for everybody in the Hudson Valley to have access to these incredible parks that are free and open to everybody. I know it's been transformative for my own experience moving into the community just a few years ago. And, you know, I think obviously there's dozens, I don't even know the number, there's dozens of parks between New York City and Albany, but I do feel like the Kingston area has gotten kind of a disproportionate benefit. We have so many cool parks with Esopus Meadows and Chopinick Ridge and High Banks. And I want to talk a little bit about all of them, although Black Creek is the star of the day. But I wonder if maybe one of you could just say a little bit, just real quick, about that, you know, kind of the big picture of the park system, because it's a bit unusual, right? Like normally, I mean, this is the kind of thing that a state government or a county government would run a giant system of parks like this. And yet here we are, relatively small nonprofit doing it. So maybe you could kind of just start with the broad brushstrokes of describing sort of, what the totality of this network is.
Yeah, we are unusual in that sense. We're not a government agency. We're a land trust. We're a conservation organization with a land trust. And some land trusts protect land, and that's it. You know, and we protect land, conserve land, and then make it available to the public. And so that is unusual. And I'd say we have, over the years, created, enhanced over 45 parks and historic sites and trail systems. Currently, I'd say we manage more than 20 of those, I'd say. And we don't do it always alone, you know? I mean, we may be the owner of the property, but the stewardship, we work very closely with other organizations, other land trusts, rely on volunteers. And we have such a range in our network of parks. We have, you know, Chopinick, as you mentioned, ridgetop, 900 acres, an amazing place to go biking and hiking and bird watching. Across the river to Poets Walk Park, which is rolling hills and beautiful, beautiful views. There's places right on the river, such as Esopus Meadows Preserve, and then we're going to talk about Black Creek and the importance of that major tributary and the experience that that one has. We have, you know, historic sites down in Cold Spring, and then Long Dock Park, an urban park in Beacon. And people, there's so many things that people can do, you know, hiking, fishing, biking, paddling, learning about science. But my favorite is to just kind of be there, you know, and almost what you were talking about, how they're just observing, like, what, you know, what are people doing? What's the sky like today? You know, that's my favorite thing to do in one of our parks.
Well, thank you. And yeah, you mentioned sort of the many different ways that, that Scenic Hudson, you know, tools in the toolbox used to preserve mm-hmm. land. And I think people are probably most familiar with the places like Esopus Meadows, you know, where you go and it says Scenic Hudson on there. And, it, you know, but I know behind the scenes that there's a lot of different approaches that you've taken. And Heather, I know that you were played a central role in the process that brought us to Sojourner Truth State Park. And that is just a, such an incredible asset and addition, especially for folks who live right next to it and can just bike right over to it here in Kingston. But I wondered if you could share with us a bit about that process and how that happened.
Yeah, sure. Well, that project was a really all hands on deck kind of organizational wide effort to really bring that on. I think for years and even before my time, there was a lot of advocacy work to try to really preserve kind of the natural habitats that have been there, especially along the waterfront. It's an old, you know, historically industrial site that was the site of brick making and cement making and a lot of that in the region here in Rosendale as well. So there was a lot of kind of research we had to get in, and we have, you know, environmental advocacy folks on staff. We have scientists, biologists. So everybody was getting involved, doing their piece. So this was a few years, even just to before the acquisition, to understand. And this one was acquired, but there's different tools, as you said. So, you know, just to try to understand what was there and what to do about it. Is it good? Does it need help? Is it safe? You know, we want to make sure, especially a property like that where it's been really changed over the years, making sure that, you know, we know what's going on, you know, what's happening. And so the process there kind of evolved into, and we worked closely with New York State to kind of really, you know, thinking long-term and holistically, like this is going to be a park and, but we need to figure out more and hiring consultants, especially landscape architects with a team, with architects on board, engineers on board, ecologists on board. That was kind of the real key. And then understand this is kind of a design process for a lot of the parks. Just what is the landscape telling us? What's here? What was here? What's the history? What's maybe hidden? So a lot of that research had been done before, and we just kind of expanded that. And, you know, because that one's 520 acres, just where do we start? Yeah. and then what's thriving already? Like, what do we need to just leave alone and let it continue? And what do we need to help along? So that was a lot of the process. And we came up with a framework plan to figure that out and decide at what level and to what degree we, you know, focused on. So we did that over several years, and you know, not too long ago, we just really focused on again bringing people to the Hudson River. That was kind of that's kind of the core of Scenic Hudson, bringing people to this majestic, you know, national treasure. So the waterfront was where it's at, and we decided to we worked with New York State to also bring trails in, and we built a pavilion, all in coordination. And it worked out. We had one contractor doing all the work. So it's locally based. So it was really nice to support that local economy too, and in that kind of holistic process. So, and I think people love it. It provides shade in this kind of open, really very open space. We added shade trees eventually over benches where, you know, it's this vast industrial scale landscape now is more intimate, and it has spaces for individuals, a lot of people together. So it's kind of, you know, really a comfortable space. And I want to go back because it's June and yeah. I want to see what's happening.
Well, thank you for giving us a little kind of insight behind the scenes there. Because I think, you know, people can maybe take for granted when you show up to one of these parks and you have this beautifully designed trail system and all these little moments, you know, where there's an aperture where a bench is put just in this right place or a pavilion is, you know, protecting you from the right here. But the amount of intention and, you know, planning and coordination and thinking that goes into that is really comes through. And so thank you for, I love the concept of landscape architecture. You both mentioned that you are landscape architects, and just that concept alone is, you know, that combination of ecology with design and architecture is just very, very neat and much appreciated. And I think I saw that you were acknowledged by the American Society of Landscape Architects, who gave an award for the analysis and planning that you just
consultant.
Described.
Mm-hmm. We received an award for planning design. So I give all the credit to our consultants, but it was critical, and the consultants are Olin. They're based out of Philadelphia, but they use a lot of local other consultants, including Hudsonia, which is, you know, very well known out of Bard for their natural research, natural inventory for us. So we were doing a lot of, you know, studies and inventories of birds, all types of things. So,
and if I can jump in, Scenic Hudson, or the project, received this award by the American Society of Landscape Architects, and then also Heather and representatives from Olin were at the conference last year, which is the national conference, and they made a presentation about the project, standing room only. I wasn't there, but I heard it was awesome. So people are talking about it all over the place.
Well, it really is neat. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Nature Nuggets, and we are talking with Rita Shaheen, who's the director of Parks and Community Engagement at Scenic Hudson, and you've been hearing from Heather Blakey, who's Scenic Hudson's senior park planner. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and we were supposed to be in the field today. The plan, up until a last minute rain cancellation, was to be down at Black Creek, and that's because there is a celebration to be had of the opening of a new, whole new part of Black Creek Park. And so maybe I'd love to pivot us. I will just make an aside that you mentioned Hudsonia. Eric Kiviat, the director of Hudsonia, was one of the first guests on the episodes of Nature Nuggets. And if you want to check that episode out, or if you've heard a little snippet of this episode and you want to hear the whole conversation, all of our episodes are archived under Nature Nuggets at radiokingston.org. So you can go look. There's all kinds of different topics there that you can scroll through and see what might be of interest. So let's turn towards Black Creek, because I love all the parks around here and I try to rotate through them. But I will say, from the very beginning, the first time I ever went to Black Creek and crossed that iconic suspension bridge, it really just became probably my very favorite go-to place. If I have a couple hours in the afternoon to go for a walk. So I wonder if you could tell us, well, first of all, what was supposed to happen today and why?
Oh, today we were going to have a celebration of not only the new section, but the entire 142 acres of Black Creek Preserve, and celebration of water, because Black Creek is its name. So the Black Creek runs right to it, through it, and lands at the Hudson River. So we were excited to share that with everybody, and to thank our volunteers, to thank our donors, and just have a fun day. So while we were looking at sort of having this big splash, no pun intended, of an event, it's now up to everybody individually to go there, and it's open 24 and not 20, it's opened every day for free. So please get out there and enjoy it.
Well, so let's talk about, well, first of all, so if you're not familiar with Black Creek, it's a beautiful preserve, just about a 10-minute drive down, 9W from Kingston. And, for years going there, there's that iconic bridge that has been actually made into an emblem featured on the bourbon bottles that they produce at the Hudson House Distillery, which I love that placemaking of using this iconic. So, but previously, you needed to cross that bridge, and pretty much your only option was to go pretty up a good steep hill and then through the woods, and you could go down to the waterfront, which is wonderful. But now there's, it's like a different park entirely because of this new area that's been open. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, well, what's special about this new area and what's the history there?
So just starting out, I want to turn it over to Heather to talk about the design and things of that 12-acre portion. But when Scenic Hudson purchased the property originally in 19... 19- I don't know, mid-1990s, it was the 120 acres that you described, and it did not include the 12 acres that is now open. And a lot of work went into making that trail system and that suspension bridge that's so iconic. But there was always this eye on this 12 acres that was in a life estate agreement with the owners that we purchased the entire property from. And at a certain time in this agreement, it was going to be turned over to Scenic Hudson to steward it and fold it into the rest of the Black Creek Preserve. So we couldn't wait to kind of begin that process. And so I think, Heather, why don't you talk about kind of how that came about?
Yeah. excuse me. So, the 12 acres, and it just opens up where the 120, it's deep in the dark ravine, the hemlocks really dark in the forest. And then you climb and you go through these different little ridges. And but then there's 12 acres. So now you don't have to go over the suspension bridge, the iconic bridge. We've now transformed what was once a driveway. This was an opportunity to really expand people's access to the riverfront. Can everybody go over the bridge? Maybe. Can everyone go up the hill? Probably not. So this was kind of, and we just didn't have any solutions until the life estate was turned over to us. This has kind of opened the door. We explored different ways that, you know, should we have cars come down? Should we have pedestrians? It just made sense that this follows Black Creek. So let's make this a journey on itself just to get to the riverfront. So that's what we did. And it's ideal. It's 12 foot wide. It's a paved path. So this really changes a lot for, you know, folks that are, you know, getting on in their years, little kids, moms and with babies and strollers. People can get there.
Yeah.
And this was kind of the background concept. We really want people and families to be with each other, and not just hikers too, but let's spend more time here. And so we wanted to make it comfortable, expand the opportunities. People can still fish. Now they have more access at the riverfront. If you're on the river in a canoe or a kayak, you can pull up. There's an old, at certain tides, but you can pull up, and you could now potentially go for a hike if you're on the river, make a day of it. But we have a picnic pavilion now. This was something that we felt important, that people could spend more time. They didn't have to be hiking to experience this. Just come here, walk, enjoy time, and you don't have to do different, you know, specific things. Just spend time in nature. What is already still there was once a Victorian gazebo. It does date back to the mid-1800s, 1850s, 60s. There was an older house that then we removed just so we could be able to maximize the potential for the site after many kind of iterations of what it could be. This felt like the best way to bring people to the site and to the river. So that was there. We also restored that. We had a master carpenter. We took time to restore that in the appropriate fashion. So we have that in this handmade timber frame pavilion, which is where we have picnic tables. They kind of are set apart from each other with different views of the river and actually different views down to the mouth. So it's really just a place in its own, as you said, in addition to the 120 acres, it's a whole different part of the park. It's a park in itself, a park. So,
yeah, what I love about it was that it's open now.
Yeah.
You know, that 12 acres was always, it was locked up, essentially. Mm-hmm. And people were curious and people were going down there. And, but to really now have that just opens up so many opportunities and experiences. And it's a wow factor as you walk down the path, as you were saying, Heather, and then you go. And there it is, this incredible big view of the Hudson River with these well thought out designed amenities that don't don't get in the way of that large, big, beautiful view, but offer great things for people.
Yeah, it really is a special place, and it feels like there aren't that many publicly accessible, you know, spots along the main, you know, Hudson River where you could just go spend a day. And this place with kind of the rolling, you know, grass and with the moments access to the river, and this is also right where the mouth of Black Creek comes into the, and so it's very special habitat. You get kind of this tidal estuary. You know, there's a lot of herons and kingfishers and the bird diversity there is amazing. And then you get this kind of rocky peninsula. You can go out on this trail, and it's dramatic and pastoral at the same time. I've been, you know, going there through the cold months since it was, you know, kind of quietly opened, and very much looking forward to the warm months, because it's the kind of place that invites you to put out a blanket on the lawn and have a picnic and stay for the whole afternoon, because you can get up and go for little walks if you want, or just, you know, it's very accessible and just very, it's very unique, special place. Anyway, definitely encourage people to check it out. We are talking about the newly opened section of the Scenic Hudson's Black Creek Preserve. And one note that I will make, try to talk about it as much as I can, is, Ulster County has a very cool program of a free nature bus that comes, picks up through Kingston, and there's a few different routes, and so you'd have to go, you know, just if you Google Ulster County Nature Bus, you can see all the different routes and times that they go. But right here from the center of Kingston, you can get on the bus, take it to Black Creek, get off, go for a walk, have a whole day, afternoon, and just keep track of when the last one, you know, coming through, and then you hop back on. So, you know, even if you don't have a car, this is a free and accessible place for the season, which is such so great. So I also want to ask, so this is amazing new development that to get to announce and invite people into, but this is, you're not stopping there. There are some really exciting kind of ambitions to keep going. And so I'm hoping that you all can lay out what is the vision for the John Burroughs Black Creek Trail.
Yeah, so the the John Burroughs Black Creek Trail was an idea that started before my time here, and probably even with staff that are retired from Scenic Hudson at this point. But started out as a way to get people boating on Black Creek itself. It's actually pretty navigable in some sections by kayak and canoe, non-motorized mostly, because it can be shallow. But then this concept of, you know, realizing there's all these conserved lands, but linking them all together. So the southernmost part is Illinois Mountain down in the town of Lloyd, just outside the Highlands, village of Highlands, and across from walkway over the Hudson, and actually connects right in now because of the Hudson Valley Rail Trail, and which is now the Empire State Trail. So this kind of evolved with partners, including the John Burroughs Association, and kind of and bringing the towns in, town of Lloyd, town of Esopus, and then Black Creek State Forest, which is also kind of in the heart of it. So this kind of vision expanded. And I want to say about maybe seven years ago, you know, because this really congealed into an actual plan, like, let's do this. And how do we do this? So we needed a plan and a path forward. So, you know, my predecessor in this role helped to do that through stakeholder engagement. And so now the plan, the idea is that it's a multimodal trail. It's across this Black Creek corridor, but also connecting historic sites, including at the core of it, John Burroughs slab site, which is a cabin that he made from hand. And he's a nature writer and essayist and teacher. So it's particularly a historic piece in this whole corridor, but also just the ecology through the Marble Mountains and the unique ridge and talus geology that's kind of created these special nooks and crannies, which are just outstanding visually and just so inspiring, and have created waterfalls along Black Creek. So trying to connect people to this environment through different modes of path, whether it's by boat or hiking. And you can also bike in certain sections, especially at Illinois Mountain. You can do mountain biking there. And then, of course, at Black Creek, since we have a shared use 12-foot wide path, you can actually bike to the end there. You know, just trying to connect that, but also bringing people in, spending time in the town of Lloyd and Sopus, that's boosting local economy. So there's kind of a win-win-win here. Yeah. And that's the concept. And so actually, now that we've opened the expanded the area in Black Creek, that's the first official segment of the John Burroughs Black Creek Trail. And Scenic Hudson has had applied and has was awarded a grant with the partners. And we're continuing to make more progress on different little projects. A key connector path from Illinois Mountain down to the Empire State Trail. A lot of access improvements at the John Burroughs Nature Sanctuary, which is the heart of this. And a lot of work had gone into different environmental study and also branding of this of the trail. So when you see a sign, you will know it and then recognize it. And, you know, this is kind of the identity of the corridor going forward. So that's been the core part of the work. And now we're executing it. So.
Wow, what an exciting project. That sounds like a very complex behind-the-scenes navigation between so many stakeholders and just the topography of the watershed. But it is such, as you mentioned, just ecologically, geologically, such a special, fascinating place. So I for one, look forward to seeing this develop. We are going to take a pause right there to hear some final words from our community for this show, and then we will come back to this conversation.
What does community radio mean to you?
People listening to see what's coming and what's happening. And I think it's just great for Kingston because we're in a transition period of growth and we need to welcome all the people that are coming in.
Radio Kingston.
Many voices.
One community.
Hi, this is Lorraine from the Kingston Farmers Market. We're open every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the county courthouse parking lot. The market is bigger than ever this year, with over 80 vendors this season. We have all of your favorite vendors with fruit, vegetables, eggs, meat, fish, cheese, and plenty of new ones, too, with live music every week, community groups, and seasonal events. Our Pop Bucks program lets kids try new veggies. We accept SNAP and offer Fresh Connect checks. Find us at the info booth to find out more. That's the Kingston Farmers Market in the county courthouse parking lot, uptown, Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on everything the market has to offer. Or visit us online at kingstonfarmersmarket.org.
Radio Kingston.
Many voices.
Many voices.
Many voices.
One community.
This is Dan Reinhardt. Since 1976, it's been my pleasure to host Sport Talk on Radio Kingston, WKNY. For all those years, we have brought you the best of local sports in the Hudson Valley, as well as covering the national sports scene with celebrity guests and many All-American athletes. Game coverage, behind the scenes, or in the locker room, Sport Talk has been there covering some of the best sports for our Radio Kingston listeners. Sport Talk every Monday night at 7 p.m. right here on Radio Kingston, 1490 AM, 107.9 FM, and anytime at RadioKingston.org.
Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and we have been having a great conversation today with Rita Shaheen and Heather Blakey from Scenic Hudson about, well, all the amazing parks, but specifically about the wonderful new expansion to Black Creek Preserve. And so, you know, I wanted to, we just have a few minutes left of the show, and I wanted to, you know, really end with an invitation for folks to get outside. There are, you know, we've been hearing about some of the awesome opportunities that are available for folks to get out and experience the, you know, vibrant nature and cool creatures that we have around us. And Rita, I know that you all just did a bit of an update if people are looking for, you know, information and how to kind of access some of these offerings?
Yes, our website, scenichudson.org, has always been a lot of useful information, but we have made some substantial changes to the pages about the parks. So if you go to scenichudson.org and go to our parks, if you're interested in fishing, you can click on a fishing and it'll take you to where those places are. So we're making it much more user-friendly, more information so people can think about before they go somewhere, where is it that I want to go and what does this place have? So we're excited about that. And that's just unfolding.
That's great. And so I realized that, you know, asking the two of you this question might be sort of like asking, you know, what's your favorite child when you have multiple kids, you know, but, you know, do you have a favorite park or a favorite trail that you would offer for inspiration if there's someone listening thinking, well, where do I start, where you would send them?
Well, Black Creek is okay. A good one, of course. I live on the other side of the Hudson. And so if it has to be... I'm going to bring my kids out to the Audubon's Buttercup Farm Sanctuary. That one's a really great one for birding as well. Lots of marshland and lots of little open fields as well. So I like that one.
Yeah, I live near Minnewaska State Park.
Okay.
So that's one of my favorite places. But if scenic Hudson Parks, I think High Banks is really a great place to check out. You know, it's just down the road from Esopus Meadows Preserve on that beautiful river, what is it, River Road. Mm-hmm. And you pull into the parking lot and there's a great view. You can just actually stay in that area or you can hike up into the woodlands. And I think it's really, it's quiet. Yeah. So if you're looking for something where there's not going to be a lot of activity, but really immerse yourself.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's great.
I really appreciate you naming High Banks because I know when I'm heading out, often I'll be like, oh, do I go to Esopus Meadows? Do I go to Black Creek? And I just often overlook High Banks, I think, because the other ones seem kind of more flashy elements or something. And so I appreciate you.
Yeah, check it out. We put a boardwalk in more recently, fixed that up. And it was a project that Heather here worked on as well. Mm-hmm.
That's a great one. The boardwalk goes right through a wetland, so you can really stand there with the tall blueberry bushes and that's really right. Kind of be in the wetland yourself. So,
well, and that's an ecosystem we have around here that's, you know, very valuable ecologically, but Absolutely. Also without a boardwalk, no fun to try to navigate.
Yeah, really.
I wanted to also ask, you know, if there's folks listening who are inspired to it, you know, avenues for community involvement or volunteer opportunities, you know, how could people find out about those kind of things?
Yeah, volunteers. We definitely love our volunteers and are always looking for more people to join us. If you go on our website, there is, I think, there's a way that you can get to volunteers, and it gives you a form you can fill out that's pretty simple. What is it that you like to do? When might you be available? And Anthony Kineski from Scenic Hudson will get in touch with you and help make that happen. And we have a wonderful Student Conservation Association member, Jeremy LaPlanche, who's also working closely coordinating volunteers. So yeah, we can't do that without them. We also have an events page that you can look at and see where there are activities that are going on. And some of them are not Scenic Hudson events. You know, it's just community events. That's a great avenue too.
Well, that's great. And another one I'll mention. So the plan for today, part of the plan, there were going to be birders and birding stations and all kinds of different things. But part of the plan was going to be the, you know, setup of the eel program. Mm-hmm. And so Black Creek is a site where there's the eel trap is put in there. And Chris Bowser, who's going to be on the show in a couple few weeks again, is just a, you know, incredible naturalist with the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation. But that is also a very unique and interesting opportunity for folks. If you want to get involved with that, you know, you can go down, they check the, I think it's called a weir. They check it almost daily through the season.
Yes.
It is daily. And, you know, the eels are, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, we have a you know, front page article, Hudson Valley One this week about them, but they are just one of the weirdest, wildest, most wonderful kind of, you know, creatures that we have in our region. So mysterious and bizarre. And you're almost you're never going to see one because they are nocturnal, they live in the mud, but you know, it's especially great for kids to come down and be able to see, you know, pull them out of the river and learn about their life cycle, and so that's something you can do as well. Well, we've reached the end here of the hour, but Rita and Heather, I thank you so much for coming and spending your Saturday morning in the studio, and even more so for the amazing work that you do keeping these parks accessible for all the rest of us.
Well, we love talking about them, and we love talking about them with you, Laurel.
Oh,
thanks
wonderful.
So much.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
take care.
Thank you so much.
Give myself to you completely.